This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
RingCentral will completely transform the way you work. It gives you built-in AI across all your business conversations. Your phone system has an AI receptionist that answers calls 24/7. Your video meetings have AI that takes notes instantly. Even your contact center has AI, so you can help customers faster. It all comes together in one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.
8 Jaguars, 4 weeks. Yamava Resort and Casino at San Manuel is giving away 2 Jaguars every Thursday starting January 8th. Club Serrano members, play to earn entries for your chance to win a new luxury crossover SUV. Join for free today and don't miss your chance to drive off in a Jaguar. More cars, more chances to win. Only at Yamava Resort and Casino, celebrating its 40th anniversary. You in? Details at yamava.com. Must be 21 to enter. Please gamble responsibly.
Welcome to Speed City with John Massengill, Les Kaiser, and Jonathan Green. It's the fastest hour on the radio. Speed City.
Good evening, gearheads. Welcome to Speed City. We are fired up. We're still exhausted from being out at Circuit of the Americas all weekend for the World Endurance Championship.
I know what those marathon runners feel like when they stop running.
Man, we do when we do the endurance races, we do endurance commentary out at Circuit of the Americas. That was a blast, though.
Hey, you know, it's I got to say, I'm very proud of what we've been able to deliver as the broadcasting group there. And honestly, what that facility has delivered. Look at the top names in racing, this top classes. And to keep it at such a reasonable cost and have all that access, we had a lot to say tonight.
Yep. I wish there were more people showing up from Austin out there this weekend. It wasn't the biggest crowd, but you know, ever since they broke everything up from the Lone Star Le Mans with IMSA and WEC, you know, for the average fan in Austin who's not fully up to speed on racing, it's a little confusing and tricky, but it was really a fantastic weekend. And of course, right now, IndyCar going on, and Formula One this morning. Wow, what a crazy race. But this John Massengill, that's Les Kaiser, you here. And Jonathan Green is not with us in the studio because he is doing IndyCar right now live for BT Sport over in the UK. He's their American correspondent. But we're going to get some calls from Jonathan to keep us up to speed in IndyCar. We got the TV on here in the studio, keeping one eye on that. So we'll keep you up to date because the championship is on the line for Indy. And we want to make sure we stay on top of that. I got one eyeball and looking at that. It does not, by the way, it's a stark contrast, Les, to the green grass of Circuit of the Americas.
It is.
At Sonoma out there, because it always looks like a desert out there. But, man, didn't Coda look green?
It looked great. It looked great. You know, it's really neat. And folks were surprised how good everything looks with all the rain. And I think they just didn't realize how much rain we had.
Well, I think I want to start tonight, Les, with Formula One. We're going to talk a lot about the World Endurance Championship because we were out there all weekend, like we said. We'll run down all the winners. And of course, Porsche winning and continuing their dominance this season before their exit at the end of this season. But Formula One, wow. You know what? I think the only way to start with Formula One is to play a clip that we got from the Formula One YouTube channel that is it's simple because it's the first exactly 60 seconds of the race, and it is phenomenal. So let's start our Formula One discussion with this clip.
It's lights out, away we go. Verstappen gets an excellent start. Sebastian Vettel needs to cover him off. Kimi Räikkönen on the inside, and he's crashed with Verstappen. He's hit Vettel as well. Räikkönen is out. Gets to the escape road, and Fernando Alonso is out of this race, as is Kimi Raikkonen and Max Verstappen as well. It's the second time this season Raikkonen and Verstappen have collided, and yes, Vettel going backwards. He is off and looks to be out of it too. He's reversing round turn five. Sebastian Vettel has lost his front wing. Disaster for him and his teammate at the start. Can he get back to the pits? But look at the damage on the left hand side.
He's got to pull over. He's pouring fluid out the back of the car. He's got a damaged radiator from when he hit his teammate.
The dream for Lewis Hamilton, though, is that that carnage has left him in the lead of this race.
How about that for the beginning of a race? Where if you woke up at 7 this morning and turned that on, you're like, okay, I'm ready to go now.
Yeah, no kidding. That was such a, you know, Lewis said it'd have to be a miracle, and Lewis got a miracle in the form of Vettel and Kimi coming together on Max. And, you know, I watched that several times because there was so much going on. And honestly, I found myself focusing on those three guys to see exactly what happened. And this time, quite honestly, Max was strictly a victim.
Yeah, I agree with you on this. I think it was kind of a racing incident, because if you think about it, I don't blame Vettel for coming over, right? He's trying to take his pole position and leverage that. But then Kimi got such a great start to come around on the left side. And here's Max in the middle, you know, doing, he's not going to let off, right? You know, he's only going to, the worst thing he could have done would have been let off, because that would have been, it probably would have made it even worse. But
been stampeded too.
Yeah, exactly, know. From behind. So there was really not much room. But the end result, of course, Lewis Hamilton went out in front and stayed there for the entire race with all the rain. And of course, that was a big part of what caused all this, because there was actually at the beginning, though, that wasn't caused by the rain, but everything else beyond that was affected by it.
And, well, you know, this was the very first time they have actually had a race in the rain, or even qualifying for that matter. They've had it on Fridays, and, you know, Singapore is definitely no stranger to rain. But as far as the racing, that's the way that's been. It was really interesting because nobody really knew exactly what to do, because the rain that had happened overnight had been so strong that it washed the rubber off the track. And so it was practically a green surface nowadays for that to start again. It was really, really tough for those to jump in. They didn't have any of the settings right. It was all a guess what they were going to do on a green track. Freshly rained, and then it started raining.
Well, it's so interesting to think about when you go back to qualifying, of course, with Mercedes just not looking good all weekend, really, up to the race, not looking Mercedes-like, I should say.
You're
because
right.
They qualified fifth and sixth, Lewis Hamilton, Valtteri Bottas, and this gift that they were given at the beginning of the race by the incident with Ferrari and the two Ferraris and Verstappen, it was, you know, surprising. And, of course, in fact, I want to play a clip. I want to play a clip from Lewis Hamilton, because the winner of the race today, because he talks about exactly that, about how this thing was basically gifted to them. Let's hear Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, what a day. I was just saying, I've not felt so good. I think it's what I've been eating during this weekend that's really started it. But today, the miracle that I needed was the rain. You know, we've come here all these years, 10 years, we've never had rain on a Sunday, even in qualifying. So it was the first time we're all driving in the rain. And when that happened, I'm like, yes, this is my day, because we're all starting from scratch. It levels the playing field, and I truly believe that if anyone's going to find the grip faster than the other, I truly believe I can do that.
Yeah,
I would have liked to heard his recap of that interview before the race. Would he have been so confident? I have a feeling not.
Oh, no. I think all of them were resigned to the fact that they were not going to beat Ferrari. And in fact, they were not going to beat Red Bull, because Red Bull was really the one that looked very dominant.
True.
The qualifying run that Vettel put in was like he wrenched 99.9999% of the car out of that to get that pole position. But Red Bull was the one that was looking like it was going to be dominant. Did you notice something? It was kind of a shame, but Red Bull had such a good race. You're smiling. You may have a different notice.
Go
something,
for it.
But Red Bull, I mean, Ricardo for Red Bull had such a good race that they didn't show him during the race. They hardly showed him at all, because he wasn't really in a position to challenge Hamilton. but he was ahead of all the mess going on behind him. So you didn't get to see Hamilton, Ricciardo during the race.
He kind of flew under the radar, yet managed to stay up there on the podium. So, you know, good for him. Always like seeing him do well.
We were talking about him this weekend, and he's become so relaxed in his interviews. I think he's one of our favorites now to listen to after the race. But you had something else that you were thinking of a minute ago.
Well, just that, you know, I think he was genuinely shocked that all of that happened up in front of him and took out all these people that would be ahead of him. And I think, you know, even at the end, I think he was still just shocked.
Yeah, we've got some folks interacting on Twitter.
Of course, it might have been having to face Eddie Jordan on the podium again.
I like Eddie. I like he's very confident, and he doesn't care what anybody thinks.
I think that's why so many of them are just a little unsettled when he comes on the podium.
Well, Andy P. just tweeted at us, and he said, the Ferraris may have just handed Lewis the driver's championship. He said they really needed a result and crashed it away. I want to play another
Andy
clip.
Andy is a smart guy.
He is.
I agree with Andy.
I do, but I want to play a clip from Inga because, you know what? Wait a minute. We're going to wait to play that. But the whole point of that is that this championship is not over. This championship is not it's far from over because we've seen way too many things that happened that surprise us. So we're going to come back to that question.
You know, what's to say the same thing doesn't happen in one of the next couple of races and the names, you know. The names are changed to protect the innocent kind of thing that come up to the front. So,
yeah,
I'm going to agree with Andy, though. I will agree with Andy. I think Ferrari handed this to him. And quite honestly, I mean, if you had to say somebody was at fault, I get the idea that Seb wanted to go all the way across and defend the front line. But I think he was too bold in doing that. And Max was watching him come across and didn't know that Kimi came up and, you know, Max got into a point. I got to give a little bit of leeway to Seb because he's got a head of steam coming across at me. And I think that, you know, that's where the contact happened. Max really didn't move around much out on his line. But,
you know what? I the stewards called it a racing incident. But if I had to say, all right, whose fault was it? And you had to say somebody, I agree with you. I think that. That it wasn't Verstappen's fault for sure,
right?
And that it probably was. I mean, it's hard to say that, but if I had to choose it, I'd say Sebastian Vettel.
Yeah,
I mean, I know that may not be technically accurate, but you know, and it may just be purely racing. But if I had to choose, that's what I'd say. But you know what? Let's do play that clip from Inga now because it's going to respond to Andy's tweet. Because again, this is a long season, so let's hear from Inga Strecca.
It's a significant blow to Ferrari and Vettel. Do you think they can bounce back from it?
Well, did you think before this race that Mercedes would be winning the race? No, they didn't even think it themselves. I don't think they even had the champagne prepared. They were so far, even in Monza, that Toto Wolff was already saying, oh, no, Singapore is not our race. We'll be, like, basically doing damage control. And Lewis on the podium said, I think God blessed us today. So he was quite delighted and still very surprised that they managed it. So who knows? I mean, Kuala Lumpur in 2 weeks' time should be more a Mercedes track, more suiting them. But who knows? Maybe everything's changed again and then the fortune swings towards Ferrari in 2 weeks' time. Who knows? I know one thing for sure. This is an amazingly exciting world championship. And we have yet a few more very, very exciting races to come. And I would put my money on that the title fight will go down to the last race in Abu Dhabi.
That's what I'm talking about right there, is that there is plenty of season left. And hopefully this thing will be in the heat of the battle when it comes here to Austin on October 22nd, 23rd, and then continue right on to Abu Dhabi. So that was Inga Strecca and Jonathan Green, of course. They just recorded that about an hour ago. And we're going to have we've got a full podcast with Inga from all about Formula One. But we're going to go ahead and take a break now. And when we come back during this next segment, we're going to get Mr. Jonathan Green to give us an IndyCar update because he's doing IndyCar live for BT Sport right now. You're listening to Speed City live in Austin, back after these messages.
I know you. Precision Camera and Video is the largest camera store in Texas with over 10,000 square feet and packed with all the latest manufacturer offerings. Founded in 1976 and still owned and operated by its founders Jerry and Rosemary Sullivan, Precision Camera is committed to the finest customer experience. With hand-picked products and on-hand experts, you won't find a more helpful, knowledgeable and accommodating sales staff for quality service. Come see for yourself. Precision Camera and Video, 2438 West Anderson Lane. MV Agusta motorcycles are the epitome of Italian style, precisely crafted with a passion for two-wheel art on wheels. Ducati Austin are the only MV Agusta and Ducati factory authorized technicians in Austin, servicing all European brands. Check the Brutale Sport Naked, the most extreme essential naked bike ever. Or the Turismo Veloce 800, the first revolutionary tourer to be built by MV Agusta. Or if you want a pedigree steeped in racing, then look no further than the World Supersport winning triple F3, 675 and 800. Or go all out for the ultimate legendary F4 MV Agusta. Italian style with Texas soul. Trade-in, consignments welcome and financing available. Ducati Austin and the home of MV Agusta at 818 Breaker Lane, just east of I-35.
Here, when you need us, Talk 1370 is the right choice.
Hi, Brendan Hartley. This is Speed City.
Nice job, producer. Brendan Hartley had a fantastic weekend out at Circuit of the Americas.
Are you talking about he got to ride with me?
Well, yeah, less guys. Yeah, I can't believe Casey, our producer, must be a closet fan of all this racing because he just chose, out of all the people in the list of bumpers he could have chosen, that was the perfect one. He won this weekend. Les got to ride around the track with him. So nice job, Casey.
He's on it.
Hey, we are going to go straight to our man Jonathan Green because he's not in the studio tonight because he's keeping the television viewers over across the pond updated on BT Sport about IndyCar. And now he's going to give us an IndyCar update. Mr. Green, how's it going?
You couldn't have joined me at a better time, boys. We are 66 laps into this 85-lap race, and it's a doozy. Four Penske's, and that's the full compliment, all in the title chase. And, of course, picks up for Chip Ganassi. Don't think Scott's going to have much chance, and we're getting down to a point where it's Pagano versus Joseph Newgarden. And Pagano decided to go on a very interesting strategy, pitted early, and is actually going on a potentially four-stop strategy. And he's just come in for his third stop and come out ahead of Joseph Newgarden, who's on red tires and he's on black tires. So we've got a hell of a battle, and Joseph Newgarden tried to overtake Pagano, who, of course, is a previous champion, but couldn't get past him, spun up his tires, and Tim Sindrick, his engineer, said, "Hey, careful, son, you know, don't ruin those tires, you need them." And of course, Joseph Newgarden doesn't have to beat Pagano in this race to win the title, so it's really, really nail-biting stuff for the new kid on the Penske block, which is Joseph Newgarden. But at the moment, my odds say Joseph has got this, and he's going to be wearing the multicolored jacket.
Well, that would be really exciting, as we've been talking about all year long, young Americans and in every possible motorsports series, and it would be fantastic to see that. So what about other young Americans like Alexander Rossi?
Well, Rossi was in a mathematical chance, but he had, I don't know what it was, they didn't know what it was, but there was a funny sounding engine, he reported, came into the pits, they had a look at it, obviously the time went by while they looked at the ECU, they may have changed some parts of the ECU, but he's back out on track, but he's out of the running, so he is out of contention, but he's still running.
Well, he's still living high from that victory that he just had, so I think he's got to be ecstatic with his IndyCar season this year. And proving that Indy 500 win was a lot more than just good strategy. So no problem with Alexander. So Jonathan, assuming that whatever something were to happen, who else is in contention for this? I mean, there was a few drivers mathematically in contention, right?
Oh, and by the way, all five drivers who are in contention are still in contention. So anything could happen right now. I'm just giving you the update of the obvious. Still in contention are Castro Neves in his 20th year of racing, but never to have won the title. Will Power, who's won the title, but, is a wily old Australian fox. And, of course, Scott Dixon. Scott Dixon's still running in fourth place at the moment. Alejo Castroneves is in fifth place. So all the guys are there. They're all where they need to be. But right now, Pagenaud and Newgarten are the two fighting it out, and it's Newgarten's title as we stand by 17 points right now.
That's it. You're getting the live championship standings from Jonathan Green, the computer mind of Jonathan Green. So, hey, Mr. Green, I want to ask you something about you're doing this for BT Sport in the UK. What is the interest level of IndyCar in the UK and around the world?
Well, it's growing, and I'll tell you why it's growing. We've got Max Chilton, of course, who was an ex-Formula One driver. They know drivers like Rossi because of Formula One, and Sato, the current Indy 500 driver. So there's a lot of guys that they are very familiar with, and of course, in the past, we've had Montoya. They know Dixon. And even Joseph Newgarden did GP3. So there is a strong interest, but the biggest catalyst, if you will, Jack Harvey's in the race this weekend. Jay Howard's driven before. These are all Brits. And they know Will Power from Renault 3.5, of course, which is also shown on BT Sport. But the big thing will be Trevor Carlin. Trevor Carlin has been winning in Indy Lights. And Trevor Carlin, of course, had a Formula One team. He's British. He's been racing in Indy for the last 3 years now in Indy Lights. But every rumor is to believe he's going to start his own Indy team next year. And who knows who will drive for him, but it'll be an all-British effort. Who knows? Alonso might come and join him for the 500.
Well, I love it. I love it that there's interest in the UK. What'd you have, Les?
I was just kind of thinking of a Porsche driver that might need a seat.
Yeah, that's a whole interesting another discussion.
Who's that?
Brendan.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, we talked about it on BT Sport tonight. Yeah, Brendan Hartley, definitely one of the potentials to drive. And why not? Brendan Hartley, of course, got so much single-seater experience.
Well, Jonathan, I know you got to run because there's only, what, about 15, 16 laps to go in Sonoma and IndyCar. So hopefully we're going to get an update.
Yeah, call me in 16 laps.
Yeah, I will call. We'll call you back in a few laps and get more update. Hopefully we'll find out who the champion is before we get off the air tonight.
You got it, boys. Enjoy.
All right, talk to you in a bit. All right, well, we're going to get another update on Indy, but I'm not finished with F1 because – and before I finish the F1 discussion, I do want to talk about later in the show, we're going to talk all about what went on at Circuit of the Americas this weekend because obviously there was the World Endurance Championship, but there was also the F4 USA Championship that came to Austin and that's coming back to Austin again for Formula One. And also a discussion about F3. And so we're going to talk about that. Those guys talked about that. But also the World Series Formula V8s, the 3.5s were out at Circuit of the Americas.
Folks, that was a flashback for so many of us. And the roaring V8s, we'll talk about those too.
Yep. And of course, the Ferrari Challenge. They had almost 50 Ferraris, 488s and 458s on the track. At one point, it was really astounding. But let's go back to F1 because it was a really obviously incredible start. But Singapore being what it is, it's it's 10 years old now, and it's a night race, it's a street circuit, and we had actually a little bit of history made because it was the first time ever we had rain at night in an F1 race in history.
Yep, isn't that cool? Maybe not for the first start of it, but it was. It was really interesting. It totally changed the dynamics that they were working on. You know, I love seeing the cars after dark. I just really like that. They were talking about how many football fields, and it was something like, it's going to take 4 football fields worth of light to actually light up the track or something.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. Well, some of the stories that I want to talk about, too. Haas F1 scored points. And one thing that occurred to me, Les, watching Haas in Formula One, it's like they've spent more time in positions 10 and 11 since they've come into Formula One by far.
I call it those bridesmaid positions.
I know. They finished 11th last year, I don't know how many times, but they've spent so much of their history sitting at positions 10 and 11. And of course, they did it again today. They spent a lot of time. But of course, Romain Grosjean finished in ninth position. More points for Haas F1.
Boom.
And obviously now that's more points than they had last year for the season. So with still plenty of races to go. And Magnussen went out, I believe, on lap 50 it was called an electrical issue. So I don't know. I never heard the final story. But Magnussen, speaking of Magnussen, he was the guinea pig today. Did you notice that? He was the first driver out on the slicks, on the ultra softs.
You bet.
And did you notice he went out and set the fastest lap of the race, and instantly every
single car, everybody
dumped out. Everybody went to the pits and get their super softs.
Hey, but we talked Haas just briefly there. They only got 29 points last year. They're at 37 now. So we're showing well in points. They're coming up. I think we've all taken that on.
We are.
Not in the French way.
We have a united, not we. We heard lots of French this weekend with the World Endurance Championship folks out there at COTA. But more about today's race. It was nice to hear a bunch of Zach Brown today. Did you notice that? How many times they went to him?
Oh, yeah.
On NBC?
A guy. Nice to be friends with him, huh?
Well, it's just kind of cool to hear an American accent, as you will, in Formula One. And there was a lot of them. They went back to him. They went to two good segments with Zach Brown. And that's a nice segue, by the way.
Yeah, go ahead.
McLaren Honda. The divorce has finally happened. And we're going to play a clip from Jonathan and Inga discussion here in just a few minutes. But that has finally happened. We knew it was going to happen also, at some point, that something dramatic was going to happen with that. So we're going to talk about that some more too. But also the other big stories, of course, Daniel Ricciardo on the podium again. He's extended his Singapore podium streak to four successive races. That's pretty cool. And of course, second place today behind Lewis Hamilton, who has had his seventh podium of the year. But, and of course, for Hamilton, this was third victory in a row. And, we talked about the momentum, and our caller that tweeted a while ago at us about the momentum that Ferrari lost. Sebastian Vettel was ahead of the pack for a good bit of the season this year. And now, what is it, a 28-point lead now with Lewis Hamilton? Because a DNF and a victory have a tendency to do that.
They will. They absolutely will. It's not one that is surprising. And we talked about that. So it's Vettel with 235, and then you've got Hamilton with 263, Bottas at 212, and then there's quite a long stretch back to Ricciardo at 162.
Well, I've got some stats for you on that, because we talk about going along the same theme, right? That is this thing over? And, and obviously it's not, but when you have a dramatic turn like this, you can't help but think that way. But Vettel, on two previous occasions, he has turned even bigger deficits into a championship. And I know this is when he's back with dominant Red Bull, but still, he is with Ferrari. So back in 2010, he trailed Hamilton by 31 points after 13 rounds. And in 2012, he trailed Alonso by 42 points after round 11 and came back to win the championship. So I know Vettel's not giving
happen.
Up. He knows that this is not over.
The season is not over. Ferrari did it to themselves, obviously, but is what I'm going to say. Racing incident or not, I'm saying if one of those three have to get a slap on the wrist, it would have been Vettel.
Well, there's a couple more clips I want to play. In fact, speaking of Daniel Ricciardo, I want to play his clip and the ever effervescent Daniel Ricciardo. Let's hear from him.
Yeah, we left it somewhere on Friday. I think now, I know if we could rerun the race, I know what setup changes would make. The way the track was after the rain, I think that adjusted the grip quite significantly. And the setup, what we'd done on Friday was obviously preparing for an even grippier track on Sunday for the race. So we kind of ran with that. And then, the downpour washed all the grip away. So let's say in simple terms, that's where we, got it wrong. But obviously, we couldn't predict, the weather that was coming before the race.
Well, he wasn't as much effervescent in that particular segment of his post-race interview, but I think he's got to be happy with a second place overall. Probably he'll be happier tomorrow than today, because he's, they knew they had a chance to win this today. And a couple other people had a chance to win it. Fernando Alonso, we haven't talked about his start. He had a phenomenal start, and he could have easily been leading that race. And after the debacle at the end, I couldn't believe it. In fact, his car was damaged. I thought he might be able to continue on.
Yeah, they definitely gave it a good shot. He got hit by Max after Max had been hit and had no control of his car any longer. But he got hit with Max. You saw Alonso go airborne. Like I said, hit in the side there, wound up taking out something hydraulic or fluid there, because ran for a few laps and then they pulled off. It was just not meant to be in that manner. But Alonso, watch the start. He comes blasting up. Well, first you'll notice that Lewis is on the far right against the wall, blazing a trail of his own, and Alonso is right behind him.
Yeah, you
making
Kimi
chase
on the left, and Alonso and Hamilton
everybody's
on the
piled
right
up on the left, and he's gone.
Well, we got to take a break. Oh, one last thing on Alonso's car. It reminded me of the Terminator. It was the whole side was ripped open, and you could see all of the mechanicals in the side. But you knew that car couldn't keep going. But all right, guys, we got to take a break, and when we come back, we're gonna try to get another update from Jonathan Green about the IndyCar. Looks like there's 10 laps to go. We're going to talk a lot about the World Endurance Championship and all the other support series that were out at Circuit of the Americas this weekend. You're listening to Speed City? Yep, we're in Austin. Talk to you after the messages.
If you've ridden motorcycles in this part of the country for long, no doubt you know of Bud's Motorcycle Shop. Bud left this world a while back, but his legendary Harley service rides on. No longer is Bud's in downtown Austin. It is now Revell's Heavy Duty, and they've moved out by the Formula One track. You'll see all the familiar faces, so bring in your new, used, and abused. But there's no sign of shiny showroom prices. So check it out at revellsheavyduty.com.
Racetrack. It's where legends are born, where only the finest machines earn their reputation for innovation and dominance. Such are the nameplates you'll find at Aston Martin of Austin, Lotus of Austin, Bentley Austin, and Rolls-Royce Motorcars. Austin exotic, iconic automobiles whose racing heritage turns everyday driving into an inspiring journey, because you're never just along for the ride. Highway 183 north of McNeil Road. Precision Camera and Video is the largest camera store in Texas, with over 10,000 square feet and packed with all the latest manufacturer offerings. Founded in 1976 and still owned and operated by its founders Jerry and Rosemary Sullivan, Precision Camera is committed to the finest customer experience. With hand-picked products and on-hand experts, you won't find a more helpful, knowledgeable and accommodating sales staff for quality service. Come see for yourself. Precision Camera and Video, 2438 West Anderson Lane.
Ed Brown, and this is Speed City.
Welcome back to Speed City. We've been talking Formula One IndyCar. We're going to go to the World Endurance Championship, because we were in the middle of it all weekend long out at Circuit of the Americas. We got the privilege to do the commentary for the weekend, and 6 hours of World Endurance Championship, and quite a bit of the F4 Championship that was at COTA as well. The youngsters in the F4 cars. And, of course, the Formula V8s, the 3.5s, first time in the United States. That was pretty cool, too. And, of course, the Ferrari Challenge. So it was jam-packed 48 hours of racing and more if you include all the practicing on Thursday. But I guess the biggest story of the weekend, of course, Porsche's continued dominance, Les.
Absolutely. You know, they didn't completely run away with it. But I think, you know, going steady and keeping it going throughout the entire 6 hours made up for it. Toyota challenged them for a few times, but no matter what, it just backed up, and Porsche showed them what they've done for years now. Really was great with Timo, Earl, and Brendan all showing well. They finished off. That's their four in a row.
Yep, Timo Bernard, Earl Bamber, and Brendan Hartley, the Hartley hair youngster that I call it. Yeah, he's still young, but we've seen him now for, I guess, since 2012 or 13 out at COTA. And it was a pretty dominant performance by Porsche, and you know, Toyota they led the race a little bit at one point, you know, with a little bit of strategy going on with tires and fuel and stuff. But and
it's it's definitely one of those things that, you know, unfortunately, it is only Porsche and Toyota and LMP1. I'm really disappointed in that. I wish Porsche wasn't leaving. And yes, I did get heckled a few people. You're not saying Porsche, right? It's like, So anyway, yeah, it was something that, you know, I was looking forward to it, hoping Porsche did well. But there they ended up, and they obviously did. Now, the 2018 has me just concerned. You know, at this point, and the funniest analogy I heard was, you know, if there's only one guy in a boxing match, is it still a boxing match? Referring to only having Toyota for LMP1 next year.
Yeah, but you know, we had Andrew Craig. He's the North American representative for WEC on the broadcast out at COTA. And, you know, he talked about all these series evolve, right? And so the way they're talking about managing that is maybe getting a little bit creative. You know, he alluded to some things that could include, like everyone's guessed, they could include something like the DPI cars from IMSA. You know, he talked very enthusiastically about the relationship they have with IMSA and how that could blend. And, you know, they've got this correction, I love the way they call it. There's only one way to correct it, because the goal here is to put the 24 Hours of Le Mans at the end of the season like a Super Bowl, right?
Right.
And the only way to do that is to have a correctional season, two seasons, because you know, that's the only way to make it mathematically all add up. And so they're calling this 18-19 the Super Season. And so they've got some time, and there's a lot of things that are up in the air right now, including some of the schedule that's up in the air. They did announce that we were hoping there was an opening on the calendar that was in 19, early 19. It was in February, I believe. Mm-hmm. We were hoping to get that one, get COTA back on the schedule for that one. And that didn't happen. That was announced that's going to go to Silverstone, and they're moving it to August. So think about it. Everything's so much in flux. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going to happen with LMP1.
Exactly. And, you know, we all hate to hear that a race isn't returning to COTA, but I feel pretty good about them returning, because Andrew Craig, and we heard it repeatedly that, excuse me, the racers love coming to Austin. They love the track. They love the environment. They love everything about this. They spend time around Texas. Earl Bamber goes dove hunting. All these different things that go on.
You know, I heard that from not just, I kind of heard that behind the scenes too.
A wide variety of folks absolutely just love the environment around here. And like I said, being 15 minutes from the city, they love that. And it's easy to get to, in and out, all those kind of things. They'll hang around extra or get here extra early and do things. So that bodes well for FIA WEC coming back. And as soon as they get the spot and the super season's settled there, I have no doubt we're going to see those folks back.
Yeah, but it was a great weekend, man. It was really, it was hot. In fact, if there was one theme across all the series, across all the weekend, it was blazing hot, high humidity out there. And of course, that affected the racing. And we're so used to seeing the World Endurance Championship race into the night, because the last few years they would start, I think it was about 5 o'clock, and they'd race till 11. Well, they started at noon yesterday. And, excuse me, on Saturday. Yeah, yesterday. Man, this was a crazy weekend. So anyway, they started at noon and they ran on till 6 o'clock, and it got hotter and hotter and hotter. And we saw some of the support series, especially on Friday, when they were still learning what was going to happen to those tires when the track temperature was, I don't know, 120 plus degrees. And so it was interesting to see that. And, you know, the big boys in WEC, I think they managed it pretty well, but the constant theme was trying to keep cool. But it was. But really, my favorite thing about the weekend, Les, was the new series, honestly, was the F4. Because the new series, Dakota, that is. And I say new, it's fairly new. This is the FIA F4 Championship. And this is a ladder system that is designed for youngsters wanting to go to Formula One. You know, nothing against the IndyCar ladder, and they've got a great ladder, but this one, it's designed for kids wanting to go to Formula One. And we've had a lot of people ask us since we started this show 5 years ago here in Austin about, you know, how do you get there? Well, this is how you get there, is F4.
Absolutely. But my favorite part of the weekend, okay, as far as racing, I'm going to say the 3.5 series, the World Series V8 formulas. I could not get over that. I just loved everything about it. Their appearance, their sound was obviously tip top. It was just fantastic to have that roar out there again from the V8, absolutely, all the way up into the, you know, blood-curdling scream of them.
Yeah, we're talking 530 horsepower, 10,000 RPM. So they're spinning up maybe not quite to IndyCar level, but they sounded, it did sound almost F1-like out there.
It is. It was really close. It was just ultra fantastic. And so that was my best racing. And the
ultra
other one.
Fantastic.
Ultra. That's beyond super fantastic. I've got to coin a new fantastic level for
a
me.
A level of fantasticness.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's an inside joke that goes back many years.
And if there was anything that I enjoyed more, it was taking a lap with Brendan Hartley.
So wait, let me preface this story. Obviously Brendan Hartley is a fantastic driver, and we've known him. So you kind of get to know a guy, and all of us have really warmed up to him, and we've watched him do really well at Circuit of the Americas. And Jonathan came back and he said, "Oh, I got a great interview with Brendan Hartley, and we put it out on our SoundCloud account." And we're like, "Where's Les? He's not in the booth." And about 10 minutes later, he shows up with this giant
cheesy grin.
I was going to use another phrase, but a grin on his face.
I'm sure they know what that is.
And I'm like, where have you been, young man?
Yeah, well, I wound up getting to go on a ride with Brendan Hartley in the brand new Porsche 911 Carrera GTS.
I hate you, by the way.
Thank you. And...
Oh, you put this out on YouTube, right?
Yeah, it's on YouTube. So go ahead and go check, either the Speed City YouTube
or
the Speed City Facebook page. And we had fun. Hartley was fun. He wasn't one that was going to talk a lot during the driving. We just talked a little bit. And so you'll get the opportunity. But especially, I know we've got a lot of Porsche fans that love the Porsche family of 911s. And so, it's interesting. I kind of was checking on one thing, especially I call it out in the video, was when we come through the stadium section. I've ridden with a lot of different folks, and I've driven through there on bikes and cars and a lot of different things. And I'll say it's really interesting how many different lines people will take through turn 16, the last curve in the stadium before they head to the big sweeper around the base of the tower. And so I kind of called it out and said, there's a variety. Let's see what Brendan takes. Brendan says, "I'll take the right one."
I found the YouTube video, and I just tweeted it out from our account, Speedcaster. And so if you watch it, I want you to pay attention to the tire squeal, because it basically never stops. So, I took Skip Barber many years ago and was never good enough
happy
to
tires.
Do anything. Exactly. The old phrase then was squealing tire is a happy tire. Well, Brendan Hartley keeps that 911 with the tires at the limit of adhesion for the entire entire lap, whether it's braking, whether it maybe not acceleration. I don't know if that car, maybe a little bit, but always through all the corners. It was really cool.
Well, I was talking to somebody else about it, and they were like, "How fast did you go?" And I said, not really. He didn't hammer it on the straightaway, but I'll tell you, he was going fast all the time through all the curves, and it was smooth. It was fast. He was, clipping the berms all the way through the apex and the exits. And I will say it was absolutely fantastic and fun to be there next to him doing this.
Well, I want to continue. I want to talk more about what happened at the WEC weekend, because we had an American win again in LMP2.
Boom.
Mr. Gustavo Menezes, who's been on the show many times. He's a great kid. He's been really successful. Another young American, and he won again in the LMP2 class. Which, you're talking about LMP1 and LMP2 and WEC and the what's going to happen? Well, LMP2 is getting faster, and Gustavo Menezes and his teammates won LMP2 again. And that was really exciting to see. And man, he was excited to get out and enjoy Austin after the race. So that was really great to see as well. And what about some of the other classes? We got to see the AM classes. When, of course, in GTE Pro, the Ferraris continued their dominance, and Ford did not have a great weekend, and they're doing great for the season, but they did not have a good weekend at COTA. And
there's a lot of discussion about that, why it didn't work out. They were, in the neighborhood of fifth last year, and I'm not sure exactly. I mean, I didn't necessarily want to go up to the team and go, "Hey, y'all kind of suck this weekend." you don't want to say it to somebody, but I really was curious about it. I don't know if it, now I know data is shared between the American Ford team and the UK Ford team. So I was curious, because the American team was here just a little while back.
We're going to find out, because we are going to get we're going to get somebody on that from that team on the phone in the next few weeks and see, you know, and look, like I said, their season's going great. So it's not like they have a debacle going on, but yeah, it was something we were rooting for, having the American Ford, you know, represented there in the World Endurance Championship, and I wanted to see them do well. So the IndyCar has finished. So hopefully we're going to get Jonathan Green back on the line here in a minute and find out and give you an update there. But also want to talk about the Ferrari Challenger was out there just a bit before we go to break, because it was a sight to behold to see 47, I believe it was, 47 Ferraris on the Circuit of the Americas at the same time. And, you know, we got there on Thursday night. I was walking through the paddock and the support paddock and where the Ferraris were. And Jonathan called me and he said, "Where are you?" I said, "I'm over in the Ferrari paddock." And he said, "How's it look?" I said, "I don't know, but it looks like there's about 100 Ferraris over here," because I kept walking and walking and walking. And it was really cool because I talked to the Ferrari guys, the PR guy there. And he said, "Yeah, we don't get the chance to put all of our cars on too many tracks." And I said, "Well," and he said, "of course, COTA being 3.42 miles and miles of runoff,"
right,
he said, "it's the perfect track." And it was pretty fun because I know after race one, we lost, not drivers, everybody was fine, but we lost five of the cars. And I haven't done the calculations on the millions of dollars that were accumulated in the sheet metal and carbon fiber stacked up on the side of the road there. But
yeah,
but it was pretty crazy. Turn 19, where everybody had trouble, but turn 20, I think what happened was that there was a wreck and a radiator spewed. And so there were Ferrari 488s and 458s spinning round and round on turn 20, right out in front of the main grandstands.
Absolutely. It was bad because, you know, there was one that was coming through and he was going to do just fine. They got a little wild and he made impact with another one right there in 20, and he got rolling again and he gasses it. Not much damage done to him, but, you know, shamed into it. He gasses it to leave it. The car loops around and he heads straight into the wall.
All right, well, we're going to go ahead and take a break, and when we come back, we are going to be live with Mr. Jonathan Green, who's doing the IndyCar coverage for BT Sport and for the UK. So stick with us, and because they just wrapped up, the cars are pulling into Parc Fermé. We're going to see who won this race and see who won the championship. Listen to Speed City back after these messages.
Precision Camera and Video is the largest camera store in Texas with over 10,000 square feet and packed with all the latest manufacturer offerings. Founded in 1976 and still owned and operated by its founders Jerry and Rosemary Sullivan, Precision Camera is committed to the finest customer experience. With hand-picked products and on-hand experts, you won't find a more helpful, knowledgeable and accommodating sales staff for quality service. Come see for yourself, Precision Camera and Video, 2438 West Anderson Lane. MV Agusta motorcycles are the epitome of Italian style, precisely crafted with a passion for two-wheel art on wheels. Ducati Austin are the only MV Agusta and Ducati factory authorized technicians in Austin, servicing all European brands. Check the Brutale Sport Naked, the most extreme essential naked bike ever. Or the Turismo Veloce 800, the first revolutionary tourer to be built by MV Agusta. Or if you want a pedigree steeped in racing, then look no further than the World Supersport winning triple F3, 675 and 800. Or go all out for the ultimate legendary F4 MV Agusta. Italian style with Texas soul. Trade-in, consignments welcome and financing available. Ducati Austin and the home of MV Agusta at 818 Breaker Lane, just east of I-35.
Listen to your favorite shows. Keep up with the latest breaking news and more anytime at Talk1370.com. Talk1370, the right choice.
This is Alexis DeGioia, driver of the Tequila Patron Toyota Camry Nitro Funny Car. This is Speed City.
How many horsepower is that? Something like 10,000?
All of them.
Yeah. I think it is. What are NHRA cars up to now? About 320? miles an hour in the quarter mile?
It's something big. Something
big, like that. Yeah, it's really, I love to chart that. It's like looking at the Dow Stock Exchange from like 1960 all. It's just a you know, it was like 200 miles an hour, 210, 220, 230. It's up to well over 300 miles an hour. But we're going to talk some IndyCar. No more NHRA because Mr. Jonathan Green has been helping the boys in the UK keep up to speed with IndyCar, doing some television commentary for BT Sport. But Mr. Green's on the line. Mr. Green, how are you?
Good. Looking good. It's over. The champion has been crowned. And guess what?
What do you got?
American.
American. Spill the beans, buddy.
Yeah, spill the beans. Joseph Newgarden is the new champion of Indy. He's done it in his first season for Penske. He's the youngest driver in a decade to do it, and he's the first American in over 5 years to do it. And while it's a fantastic piece of, it's a fantastic story for Joseph Newgarden, the race was actually run by Simon Pagenaud when you last reported to me. Simon was leading. He did win the race, but he would have to have had Joseph finish fourth or less. Tim Cindric, his engineer, was, you know, trying to walk him home, trying not to make him do anything silly and try to win the race because he didn't need to. So Pagenaud won the race, but Joseph Newgarden won the championship for the captain. And I think the biggest thing of all is I'm delighted for Joseph, but the significance for IndyCar, for the Verizon IndyCar Series, to have a young 26-year-old, good-looking American, fast as you like, with a career ahead of him, with the captain and Penske, is huge. This is what Indy. This is the shot in the arm that Indy needed. Just as we've been talking about Rossi for so many years in Formula One, and we continue to talk about Haas. And, you know, I think this is the turning point for American racing in the new era of Indy, because they wanted a young, marketable American, and they've got one. So it's a great story.
God bless the USA.
Boom.
Yeah, boom. That's great, Jonathan. I saw that Simon Pagenaud actually won the race in Sonoma, but that is such fantastic news to have young American. I can't wait to. I hope we can get him on the show soon, because we've had him on the show a few times, and I just want to hear that enthusiasm. But man, it's so great to have American back in Indy. I mean, I love the flavor that the international drivers give it. But it's such a good thing. And so what are some of the highlights of the race, Jonathan? I really, you know, since we were prepping for the show tonight, really didn't get to watch it.
To be honest, it really wasn't that an exciting race, unless you know Joseph Newgarden.
Yeah.
Basically, it was a strategy race in many ways. You know, in Indy, you have to do at least one stint on the reds and one stint on the blacks. You could choose, but you have to do that. There was five guys gunning for it, six mathematically with Rossi, but he was out early. Everybody was lying astern, and the only man that made a decision to do something different was the Pagenaud, who came in on lap 12, and therefore went for a four-stop strategy, which allowed him to get ahead of Newgarden early by jumping in the pits early. But, of course, he was running less fuel, so he was able to run fast and lead the race. But he was hoping that there would be, you know, no cautions, because he had to do four stops. So it was an interesting strategy race. But the point is, I also think that it was a strategy by the team too, because it was almost safeguarding the championship. Because if there was a problem for Newgarden, there would be Pagenaud, there would be Power, there would be someone to pick up the pieces. Effectively, Castroneves as well. And so the race was really kind of won and lost on that. On the first corner, for one, because all four of them qualified at the top, and Joseph got the lead, but then Pagenaud got the lead by taking the early pit stop. So it was interesting. And how about this? You know, the push to pass. Well, Newgarden had 90% left at the end of the race. So
wow,
that's how good he raced.
That's how good his car was. Now that's pretty amazing. Yeah. That's kind of like Rossi.
I got one other little tidbit for you.
Yeah.
We talked to Joseph a few weeks ago, remember, when I talked to him about Tim Cindric, who has been Power's mentor, has been the top engineer at Penske for many years. Well, you may know the name of his son, Austin Cindric, who is in the Truck Racing Series, but now in the Global Rallycross Series. And he was in the Global Rallycross Series last week. He's just a 19-year-old kid. But he's really good, and Tim was there. And ironically, Tim Cindric Austin said that he used to race against Joseph Newgarden, and that is where Tim Cindric first spotted him and thought, aha.
Uh-huh.
So there's a big connection there. So there's a really good connection between Tim Cindric and his new champion, Joseph Newgarden.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, it's going to be fun to watch Justin Newgarden's career in Indy, and I can't wait to see you for next year. But, Jonathan, we talked a lot of Formula One during the show today, but I want to get your take on a couple of things from today's action in Formula One. We played some of the clips from you and Inga, and I know that there's a full podcast with you and Inga Strecka, and that was some really good stuff. And I want you to give us your take on the McLaren, Honda, and Renault, because besides the race today, that's obviously the big story in Formula One right now. So we've talked about a lot of the race, but give us your take on McLaren and Honda and Renault and the impact of all that and possible scenarios.
Well, first and foremost, it had to happen. McLaren are too big. They've got huge Middle Eastern money, and they had a shakeup, including Zak Brown and Ron Dennis leaving and Zak coming in. And, you know, there's been a lot of change at McLaren in the last few years. But McLaren are used to winning, and they're a top team, and they always have been. And frankly, the last 3 years has been an embarrassment to the road car, the investors, the Formula One team. And it's not they've been their fault. The car's good. And as we proved today, before Alonso went out, Alonso felt that he had a good enough car on a slower street circuit. In other words, negating the engine, that he could win the race. So basically, Honda have let them down. And they're embarrassed, given that they had a championship a few years ago where they won everything. So it's just a sad situation. But Honda aren't, you know, last time Honda did this, they pulled out with BAR, and it was a waste of money. They sold the team for a dollar. So now, doing this deal with Toro Rosso keeps them in the game. And actually, it's a very smart move by Red Bull, because Red Bull will only benefit from this, because you can argue that the Red Bull-Renault relationship has never been cozy since the last few years. And I believe that once Honda and Toro Rosso get up to speed, they'll then actually go to Red Bull. So it's actually a win-win. And of course, it's a great win for Carlos Sainz.
Yep, that's true, and that's going to be fun to watch that whole scenario breakdown. But, Jonathan, we just got a little bit of time left. Les and I were talking about what a fantastic weekend we had out at Circuit of the Americas, and I want to thank everybody that was out there. We'd love to be on the microphones out there. Thank Coda and WEC for letting us do that. And, Jonathan, any thoughts from the weekend? Overall, we talked a little bit about the Winners' Niche Classic, Gustavo Menezes and Porsche and Ferrari and all that. But it was a fantastic weekend overall, especially with F4 and the V8s.
Yeah, to me, having single-seaters at COTA and FIA single-seaters at COTA, very significant. And I think that's what COTA should take away with it. Not worry about the fact that the Lone Star Le Mans will not be next year. So, you know, I think, to me, those single-seaters being there was great. And, wow, what great LMP1 racing we had.
Yep. All right, well, we got to run. Thanks, Jonathan. Thanks for listening tonight. Check us out on our website, speedcitybroadcast.com. Talk to you next weekend.
Ciao, y'all.
Let's jump in my El Camino.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
RingCentral's AI receptionist uses voice AI to answer on the first ring, so you'll never miss a call again. In just a few minutes, you can personalize your own AI receptionist to answer questions, route calls, schedule appointments, and even send texts in multiple languages. Plus, it's easy to scale. Create unlimited AI receptionists across any phone system. It's all powered by one reliable platform for effortless AI communications. See for yourself at ringcentral.com. RingCentral, voice of your business.